Morning to each one. I want to greet you in the name of the one that has brought us together here this morning, the one that brings people together of all ages, nationalities, interests, brings us together through the blood of Jesus, his son, gives us something in common. And we want to worship him this morning. For a message this morning, I'd like to some time ago I was assigned a subject and did some study on it, and I'd like to bring the message to you here this morning, not because I feel like there's a problem here, but because I think there's some inspiration that we can gain from it. Bridging the generational gap is a subject I'd like to look at this morning, and there's a lot of different ways to say that title, Bridging the Generational Gap. Some people simply call it passing on the faith. That's what I'd like to look at this morning. Now, this term, the generational gap, I looked it up, and it was coined in the 60s and 70s, and I didn't live during that time, but I know a number of you did. But the definition that they gave was a difference in values and attitudes between one generation and another, especially between children and their parents. So that's what a generational gap is, a difference between one generation and another. They don't line up the same. There's a gap there, especially between children and their parents. We're not simply talking about age difference, because we know that parents are always older than their children. It is true that a difference in age makes a difference in interest, makes a difference in energy level. That in itself can create a small gap between a 46-year-old dad and a 16-year-old son. And we're talking about something beyond that. And you've probably seen it depicted already in a drawing or a cartoon. They show up every so often in a newspaper or in a magazine of some kind that depict an older person and a younger person. When I went and searched this generational gap idea, one of the things I found was a picture of an older man sitting on a bench with a simple shirt and trousers on, maybe even with suspenders on, and he's sitting beside someone you might call a punk on the bench, and you can imagine how he was dressed. Showed the difference between the two. Different clothes in every way, different caps on. One's holding a book, the other one's holding some kind of electronic device. One has earbuds in, the other one doesn't. You can imagine which was which. Just depicted a picture of a generational gap. And we see that a lot today. Is it okay? And what can we do about it? That's what we like to talk about this morning. And I've heard this thing several times in the last few months. I think it was two of my neighbors talked to me about it, and then there was an attendant at a gas station that talked about it as well. The difference between what the older generation did and what the younger generation does. They saw our children out skating. One of my neighbors saw our children out skating, and he met me later on and told me how much he appreciated that and how he can't get his boys to go out and do something like that. They just want to sit in the house, sit on the bench and play, sit on the couch and play their games rather than go out and skate. When we were young, we used to go out and do all those things. Well, that's too bad. But there's a change in the generations. Another one talked about the discipline, what they got when they were young, and what he sees his son giving to his children, his grandchildren. There's a big difference in the kind of discipline that he received and the kind of discipline that is being given to children today. Someone told me recently they thought that spanking was illegal. This was a Christian man that I work with a good bit. He didn't think that people still spank their children anymore. Well, there's a difference in the generations. It's changing. I also read a quote in a tract that I found. Many people assume that youth naturally have tastes and attitudes different from those of older people, and that youth must have something exciting and different. Is that how we feel? That youth are different than older people? And they need something new, they need something exciting, they need something different than what was before. And later in the same article, he made this statement. He said, it is not that youth are bad, But they lack experience and perspective. They're ignorant of the past and therefore lack perspective for the future. And I thought that was true. It's not that there's anything wrong with youth. I'm not here to preach down to the youth today. But it's simply a lack of experience. And if we can teach our children to value older people and their perspectives on life, and rather than make fun of choices that they made, maybe help them see why some people have made the choices that they have, it's a good thing. The title seems to suggest that there's something needs to be done about this. It says bridging. Is this something that we need to worry about today in our churches, or do we pretty much have it sewed up that the youth are going to follow their parents, and as the generations go by, there'll be little change, and we'll all look the same and act the same and do the same and end up in heaven just the same? Is that the way it's going to be? Man, I would say that we all know that the devil is alive and well, and he'd like to destroy the human race. And one of the ways he liked to do it is break down Christian homes. We see that happening more and more. But man would like to believe, and the devil pretty much has society as a whole convinced that man is improving. Every generation is getting better. We're becoming more advanced. We're evolving. We're getting better every generation. And as a Christian, when we look at the world, we realize that that's not happening. Society does not have it put together. In fact, it is breaking down. Every year it is becoming worse. Fewer and fewer children that are born to married parents. Fewer marriages that are lasting. And fewer people that are unselfish. People are becoming more and more selfish, it seems. But what is bridging? Bridging the generational gap. When we think of a bridge, you have two sides. You have a chasm. If you had a whiteboard up here, I could draw it. And you have goods on one side. You have values on one side that need to get to the other side. And so we build a bridge so we can carry from one side to the other side. Bridges benefit us many times a day in our lives today. And in a spiritual sense as well, if we can build a bridge that helps us to get the goods, the wisdom that is up front here, and pass it on to the benches that are behind, that's a good thing. And we need to learn how to do it with the least amount of effort and loss. And you've seen how bridges have changed over time and become more stronger and last longer and more efficient. Hopefully, as we look at the past generations and how they've lived, we've learned something from it, and have been able to find better ways to pass on the faith to our children. If you're coming looking for a simple answer, simple fix, there is none to this problem. It takes a lot of effort, takes a lot of energy, and I guess you could say the problem is fluid. It's changing all the time. It's changing. It's true that youth want something different. And part of the reason is society's changing. And technology's changing. And fashion is changing. All these things are changing all the time. And so there's a sense in which our solution to this problem must adapt as well. We know that the Bible is the ultimate solution to the problem because it's the human nature that's causing this, and yet we also realize that the challenges that face us today was different than what was in the 70s, and that was different than what was in the 50s, which was different than what was in the 30s, if you know history. Things that have happened through history has affected parents and their children. I like to go back to Genesis chapter 5. Go back to Noah and look at this generation gap that existed in the days of Noah and try to learn a few thoughts from it. Get some inspiration from his life. I'd also like to go look at another Old Testament character as well and how he related to the gap that he found between him and his children and try to learn some things from it. But when you look back in history, there's few days that are as dark and dismal as the days of Noah. There's few days that were this dark. Let's read Genesis chapter 5, verse 32, the last verse, over to chapter 6 and verse 9. And Noah was 500 years old, and Noah begat Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And it came to pass, when men began to multiply on the face of the earth, and daughters were born unto them, that the sons of God saw the daughters of men that they were fair, and they took them wives of all which they chose. And the Lord said, My spirit shall not always strive with man, for that he also is flesh. Yet his days shall be 120 years. There were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came in unto the daughters of men, and they bare children to them, the same became mighty men which were of old, men of renown. And God saw the wickedness of man, that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And it repented the Lord that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him at his heart. And the Lord said, I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast and creeping thing, and the fowls of the air, for it repented me that I have made them. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. These are the generations of Noah. Noah was a just man and perfect in his generations, and Noah walked with God. And I said this was a dark time in history, a very dark time in history. It was a darker time in history than what we have today. How many people do you know who are trying to follow truth? Well, at least probably the reason that all of you are here this morning is because you'd like to follow truth. You like to know what it takes to get to heaven. That's why you're here this morning. So there's a good many. Even though we know that most people around us seem only to care for sensationalism and materialism and those things like they did in Noah's day. But when Noah looked around to see who all else was finding grace in God's eyes like he was, there was no one. Maybe his father, I don't know. Lamech was still alive during some of this time. He passed away shortly before the flood. But there was no one else. No one. No one that found grace in God's eyes. It was such a bad situation. In verse 6, he says that he wished he had never even made man. Now you think about it. If there ever was a threat of a generational gap between Noah and his children, it should have been this time. He had his three sons when he was 500 years old. So that not only, that's a bigger gap than any of us have had between us and our parents, years-wise. You think about how much could have changed in the last 500 years and how much out of date Noah could have seen from himself to his children, to his three sons. What if your dad was born in 1515? Around the time that Columbus discovered America. How much has changed since then? About 100 years or so before the King James Version was translated. Don't you think you think he's a little bit out of date? But if you were the only one alive today that believed in God, how would you make out with your children? Would they follow you like they followed Noah into an ark? That's really challenged me. If there was nobody else, am I that convincing to my children that they would follow me into something that everybody else believed to be so foolish? And somehow those men, and it had to be the Spirit of God working, but somehow those men found wives that were willing to follow them into that ark as well. That's how convinced they were that God was truth and it was worth following God. If you're not sure, absolutely sure, that your children would follow you like Noah's children followed him, then I would say that we should be thinking about this question. Then we should be. Then there is a reason. It's not a dumb question to look at this morning. So what are some answers? I looked at Noah's life here, and there was a few things that I noticed. He was 600 when he went into the ark. He was 500 when his sons were born. And he was 120 years in making the ark. Which tells me that he heard the call of God long before his sons were born. And that was established in his heart. And he was already working on God's project in his life. Years into building the ark, collecting the goods to build it when his sons were born. One thing that tells me is young people need to come to the Lord before their parents, before they are parents themselves, before they bring children into the world. That's the best way. We need to get that established in our mind that we are God's children, we are following God, and we are working on a project for God. And when our little ones come along, they will begin to pick that up. They will enter into that vision with us. That's number one. Come to Christ in your youth. Number two, it says here that Noah was a just man. Remember how wicked everyone else was? Everyone was just as wicked as they could think of being. But not Noah. He was just. He was a man of integrity. He did what was right, no matter what anybody else did. He did what was right. And it caused him to find grace in God's eyes. We need to be those kinds of parents. Parents that are just. Parents that do what's right. Another word it uses to describe him here, the third thing I see is that Noah was perfect in his generations. And I think that perfect probably speaks of discipline. At least that's what I took from that word. Noah was a man of discipline. He had the same passions that all of us had. He had the same passions that all the people around him had. He was the same flesh, same blood, had the same desires in his life. And yet he chose to discipline himself. He kept them in check. And he did that by choosing godliness. That's how he did that. He chose godliness, and it helped to keep his passions in check. And God here calls him perfect. And the last part of that verse 9 says that Noah walked with God. Noah was connected to his power source. He was connected with God. He walked with God. And I imagine that this was a daily thing, that he talked with God. And he was absolutely convinced that there was a God and that he was real and that he cared about how he lived. He was connected to it. And I believe that this is what lit up his sons. It lit them up. They saw that and it lit something in their own heart. He passed that power on to his sons. And we know that obedience inspires more obedience. As when parents are obedient, it inspires obedience in other people as well. When older youth are obedient, it inspires obedience in younger youth. Everyone has someone following them. And following has become quite a term in this day because there's so many different, I don't even know what you call them. Just call them things on the internet. So many different places where you can follow someone else. You can like what they do. And people measure how important one person is to another by how many followers they have. We all have followers, each one of us. There's always someone younger, someone that is influenced by how we live. And we also know that disobedience breeds more disobedience. And that disobedience takes us farther from the truth and makes more disobedience. That happens just as well. I wish that all generation gaps ended up well. I wish that being a preacher would fix everything. You didn't have to worry about it. It would be that simple. But it's not that simple. And I like to turn over to 1 Samuel and look at what was supposed to be one of the most important men in the children of Israel during this time frame, their highest spiritual leader, which of course God was that, but next to them, the man that commanded the temple, story of Eli and his sons. I'd like to look at some verses there this morning and learn from the story when it didn't turn out so well. If you turn to 1 Samuel chapter 2, I like to read verses 12 to 17 in chapter 2. And read down to verse 17. Now the sons of Eli were sons of Belial. They knew not the Lord. And the priest's custom with the people was that when any man offered sacrifice, the priest's servant came while the flesh was seething with a flesh hook of three teeth in his hand. And he struck it into the pan or kettle or cauldron or pot. All that the flesh hook brought up, the priest took for himself. So they did in Shiloh unto all the Israelites that came thither. Also, before they burnt the fat, the priest's servant came and said to the man that sacrificed, give flesh to roast for the priest, for he will not have sodden flesh of thee, but raw. And if any man said unto him, let them not fail to burn the fat presently, and then take as much as thy soul desires, then he would answer them, nay, but thou shalt give it me now, and if not, I will take it by force. Wherefore the sin of the young men was very great before the Lord, for the men abhorred the offering of the Lord. Now these sons of Eli, they were not good men. And one of the ways that the priests were supported was through the sacrifices that people came, brought when they came. And the priest was allowed to take part of it. You find those provisions back in the Old Testament law. But here these men took more than what they were allowed to take. And beyond that, they didn't want it taken. They didn't want to take it after it was already partially cooked. They wanted it while it was raw, so they could cook it how they wanted, use it for themselves. And that was against the law. And here these people were coming to bring a sacrifice to God, to worship God, and these priests were ruining it for them. They were causing them to disobey. That was one of the things they were doing wrong. Jump down to verse 22 to 25. Now Eli was very old and heard all that his sons did unto all Israel, and how they lay with the women that assembled at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And he said unto them, Why do ye such things? For I hear of your evil dealings by all this people. Nay, my son, for it is not good report that I hear. Ye make the Lord's people to transgress. If one man sin against another, the judge shall judge him. But if a man sin against the Lord, who shall entreat for him? Notwithstanding, they hearken not unto the voice of their father, because the Lord would slay them. And here you have these men taking on the practices of the idolatrous nations around them and allowing immorality to be involved with their worship. And Eli went and tried to address it, but they would not listen. He waited too long to go and confront the problem. Turn over to chapter 4. I like to read about what happened to them here as well. Another thing that they did wrong. They had very little respect for the things of God. And the word of the Lord, and the word of Samuel came to all Israel. Now Israel went out against the Philistines to battle, and pitched beside Ebenezer. And the Philistines pitched in Aphek. And the Philistines put themselves in array against Israel. And when they joined battle, Israel was smitten before the Philistines. And they slew of the army in the field about 4,000 men. And when the people were come into the camp, the elders of Israel said, wherefore hath the Lord smitten us today before the Philistines? Let us fetch the ark of the covenant of the Lord out of Shiloh unto us, that when it cometh among us, it may save us out of the hand of our enemies. So the people went to Shiloh, that they might bring from thence the ark of the covenant of the Lord of hosts, which dwelleth between the cherubims. And the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were there with the ark of the covenant of God. And when the ark of the covenant of the Lord came into the camp, all Israel shouted with a great shout, so that the earth rang again. And when the Philistines heard the noise of the shout, they said, what meaneth the noise of this great shout in the camp of the Hebrews? And when they understood that the ark of the Lord was come into the camp, and the Philistines were afraid, for they said, God is come into the camp. And they said, "Woe unto us, for there hath not been such a thing heretofore. Woe unto us, who shall deliver us out of the hand of these mighty gods? These are the gods that smote the Egyptians with all the plagues in the wilderness. Be strong and quit yourselves like men, O ye Philistines, that ye be not servants unto the Hebrews as they have been to you. Quit yourselves like men and fight." And the Philistines fought, and Israel was smitten, and they fled every man into his tent. And there was a very great slaughter. And there fell of Israel 30,000 footmen, and the ark of God was taken, and the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were slain. And there ran a man of Benjamin out of the army, and came to Shiloh the same day, with his clothes rent, and with earth upon his head. And when he came, lo, Eli sat upon a seat by the wayside watching, for his heart trembled for the ark of God. And when the man came into the city and told it, all the city cried out. And when Eli heard the noise of the crying, he said, "What meaneth the noise of this tumult?" And the man came in hastily and told Eli. Now Eli was 98 years old, and his eyes were dim that he could not see. And the man said unto Eli, "I am he that came out of the army, and I fled today out of the army." And he said, "What is done there? What is there done, my son?" And the messenger answered and said, "Israel is fled before the Philistines, and there hath been also a great slaughter among the people. And thy two sons also, Hophni and Phinehas, are dead, and the ark of God is taken." And it came to pass, when he made mention of the ark of God, that he fell off the seat backward by the side of the gate, and his neck brake, and he died. For he was an old man and heavy, and he had judged Israel 40 years. This is another story, and I'll stop reading there. It's another story of a generational gap between a man and his sons. And the reason that it happened was because he didn't confront his sons. He didn't confront his sons with what they were doing wrong until it was too late and they cared not anymore. His sons grew up with very little respect for the things of God. They cared only when it brought them personal gain. They were happy to have the temple there, but not to worship God. They were happy because it brought them food, women, and power. They only looked at the Ark of God as a good luck charm, something to help them in their battle from their enemies. They didn't have the spiritual moorings that their father did. Their father actually cared. When that ark was out to battle, he was worried about it. He wanted to know that it would come back safely again. You see in this situation that this generational gap was huge, and it had eternal consequences. These men went into eternity unsaved because of their ungodliness, their wickedness. And too many times, we simply called it a generational gap, when we should have called it rebellion. Well, we should have called it sin. The difference between the parents and the children was sin. It wasn't just that the times are changing. And you see it happening today. The younger generation is banding together more and more to promote tolerance in things that are nothing short of wickedness. And that we should allow all kinds of ungodliness. And I pray that it doesn't come into the church. But there's many churches today, even churches that have called themselves Mennonite, that are dealing with these things. I'm only 33, and I like to think that I'm still a youth. But I have younger brothers that tell me I'm not a youth. It doesn't seem like it was so long ago I was a youth here, and many of you remember that. They're quick to point out that I'm out of touch. I'm way too practical. And don't follow along with some of this stuff like I used to. There's vehicles out there that I'm not sure what they're called anymore. It wouldn't have happened 13 years ago. What can we do about bringing all of this together? I'd like to just think about a few points about that. What can we do to help bring some of this together? This between the youth and the older ones. And I think, first of all, that we need to understand that the responsibility for this gap lies primarily with the older generation. The responsibility for this is not the youth. It's not the children. And too many times we look down on them for their disobedience or for something that, you know, for what they're doing and how it's different. And we complain about it and to each other. When it's not, wasn't necessarily their fault. It was the parents that raised them. Let's understand that this is our responsibility. All of us who are older. And I'll be quick to remind you that all of us have someone younger than us here. And the only one that doesn't know it. All the rest of us have someone that we're influencing. And it's our responsibility to do something about it. The next point I have is in a question form. What can I do to bring this bridge together? Do I understand my calling? Do I understand my calling? And too many times the answer to that is providing for my family. And I think about it in dollars and cents. I understand I have a calling, but I measure it in money. I'm supposed to be making a living. I need to help pay for the school tuition. I need to make sure there's enough of food and clothes and that we have a decent vehicle and a big enough house and all those things. Is that my calling? Is my calling making money? Yeah, that is part of my calling. It is part of my calling to provide it in that way, to have something to pass on to my children. But my calling is much more than that. My calling is, first of all, a spiritual calling of knowing Jesus and living my life, being a follower of Jesus. That's my first calling. And Jesus said that if we seek first the kingdom of God, all these other things are going to be taken care of. But it's most important to seek first the kingdom. I have a friend contacted me early this morning, and he said, "Did you see that Dave Barger died?" It's one of my neighbors. Well, he owned property next to me. He owned a lot of property. In fact, he owned 4 different radio stations and quite a few commercial properties in Altoona and a lot of residential stuff up around the campus. He owned a lot. And he was actually that popular that he made front page in the paper when he died. And when I was actually more disappointed when I read the article, because the individual that called me about it, I've been trying to convince that he needs to find a way to heaven. I've been trying to convince him this. And he hasn't been convinced of it yet. In fact, he recently had called me and complained about someone that says he's born again, yet he found out that years ago he did all kind of evil things. And when I read this article that was about him, it says his wife talked about him and her were both born-again Christians. Only problem is you'd never know it if you tried to do a business dealing with him or if you worked for him. Different ones had stopped by the farm along the way that worked for him, and I talked to them. I talked to him, and most of the people that worked for them were making minimum wage or maybe a little bit above. And he had 4 children, and one of them is a preacher. But none of them live in the area, and they rarely do they come back to visit him. And I don't know all the reasons that was. But I kind of have a feeling that a lot of people felt used, that his children felt used just like a lot of other people felt used. And yet he's a born-again Christian. Do I understand what my calling is? Number 3, do my children know what my calling is? Has it been communicated? And one of the thought back to my own father, and one of the examples that your parents leave for you. But I knew that pretty much every morning that he would be sitting at the kitchen table at 6 o'clock reading his Bible. From 6 to 6:30, that's when he read his Bible, and that's where he was. Pretty often, unless he had to be away from home for something. Well, that said something to me. What kind of habits do we have as parents that are speaking to our children? How are we communicating it? Life is not fair. Life brings along lots of unfair situations. How do we react to them? God gives everybody a struggle. God gives everybody something to test them in what they're going to do with it. They're going to have to decide what to do with it. Every one of us is tested with health issues or material issues or some other issue, mental issues. And God allows us to have these things to see what's inside of us. And our children see that. Are our children convinced that we are standing for truth? Have they been taught the difference between the things that are temporal and the things that are eternal? What is just here? And that was the comment I sent back to the young man when he sent me that text message this morning. I said, well, he left an awful lot behind. He left an awful lot behind. He left all of it behind. I'm not even sure what he took with him. I said, we'll let God decide what he took with him. Are we teaching our children that all these things that we borrow money for and pay off, they stay here? And the only things we take with us are what we put into other people's lives, whether it be our children, our co-workers, employees, or friends, neighbors. The only thing that gets taken to the other side is human lives. Well, let's stand for these things. If we have found it, let's stand for it. Let's not be afraid to stand for it. That's another point in bringing us together. Let's stand for it. Let's not be afraid of staying the same when everything else is changing. There's nothing wrong with staying the same if you're standing on what's right. There's some things that are worth standing for. And keep them in the right order. It's right to make money. It's right to be frugal. It's right to do all those things. Maybe I'm talking more about that because that's the stage of life I'm in. But let's not do those things at the expense of the assembly of the saints. Let's not be frugal at the expense of Christian service. Some reason when it's time to give, then we want to be frugal. When it's time to spend money on ourselves or on fun things for the family, then maybe we're a little more generous because it's benefiting ourselves. Is it a question whether or not we go to prayer meeting? Should it be a question? Dad, are we going to prayer meeting tonight? Or do they always expect that we go? We always go. There's church tonight, we're going, unless someone's sick. Teaches our children something about our values. Or when someone passes away, someone that we know, do we go to the viewing, do we go to the funeral, or don't we? I know it makes a difference how far away they are, but some of those things help teach our children something. Everybody else lets their children behind. At least you go to a funeral. Unless they're immediate family, they're not there. People of the world. Let's share our goals with our children. Are we headed to the same place? I think we are. We should be, us and our children. So how different will we really look between parents and children? How different should we look as far as what we dress, what we do for an occupation, how we live? For both trying to honor God, we should look a lot the same. One of the places I looked up this generational gap was Wikipedia, and I don't like Wikipedia, and I don't encourage people to go there a lot. But I went there because I knew it was edited by the common man, and it would give an idea of the opinions of the common person. It mentioned three areas of change when it comes to generational gap. And the first one was language. People losing their second language was part of it. How many times from parents to children there's been a change in moving that languages are lost? I'm not saying that's all wrong. Parents know one language and children don't know another. It also talked about new words or phrases and slang changes. And there becomes a gap between parents and children. what's acceptable and what's not. Also talked about our appearance and talked about dress. Well, we already know that. And it talked about technology. So how do we decide what's right? Must we keep it the same? Whatever my dad allowed me, my sons must do the same. Whatever rule we made for the oldest sibling, we must keep that for the youngest sibling in the family. Is that how we decide? Is that how we combat this? My youngest brother and I, I think we're probably about 14 or 15 years apart. My oldest brother, I suppose it's getting close to 20, it's probably close to 20 years between the two of them. Were there some changes during their time? Absolutely there was. There wasn't cell phones. Well, there might have been a van phone, car phone, for my oldest brother. Until the youngest one came along, pretty much everybody had a phone. Does it change? Yes, it changes. It changes a lot. Is there a higher standard that spans that time, test of time? Yes, there is. And that's the Bible. That's the principles of God's Word. And the same Bible that we don't have to keep the rules necessarily the same from the oldest to youngest, but we must honor the same principles, whether it's the oldest child or the youngest child. Whether it was grandfather using the Bible to decide what to do with electricity, the telephone, the automobile, or television, and many, many other things. There are many areas of dress. We could talk about styles and show pictures of people up front here. It would make the rest of us laugh. Why did they dress like that? Why did they do this or that? And grandfather applied the Bible to it and made choices based on that. And I can today too. I can use the same word when I look at the internet or my smartphone or whatever other new invention is going to come along that we don't know about yet. I'm sure there's going to be more, plenty more. We can use the same principles and come to a right decision. None of us want to be defiled. We all want to enter heaven. And in order to do that, we're going to have to be willing to give up what the flesh wants sometimes in order to make it there. And there were things that grandfather accepted or rejected. And there are things that we're going to have to do that with as well. Another way that we minimize this generational gap is we need to make an effort to interact between the oldest and the youngest. We need to make an effort to interact. It's good for young people to listen to old people and their stories and their wisdom. If you can learn it, learn by it, you don't have to experience it. That's one of the gifts that my father gave to me. I still remember we were going to church one time and he said, "I got a new rule for you after church this morning. I want you to stay in the auditorium for at least 10 minutes before you go out." And I may have mentioned this here before. He didn't like how we all ran out of church as soon as it was over. Well, guess what? When church was over that morning, our friends always did the same things they always did before. They went right out the back door like they did before. Sat it out in the car or somewhere else and told stories. They didn't know about this rule. But it was a good thing. We always sat up front because we needed to. And the old men sat up front too. So what did you do for the next 10 minutes? Well, you talked to the old men. And that was a good influence on my life. That was a good thing. I became friends with some of the older men at church, which a number of them have passed away now. But there's still some of them I count as friends. And learned a lot of stories about CPS camp. I don't know if there's anybody around anymore that can tell those stories. They're gone now. And that 10 minutes wasn't just 10 minutes soon. It became 20 and 30 minutes, as you can well imagine. It was a good thing. But old people and young people need to learn how to do that if they want to pass it on from one generation to the next. Because those things that were, those hard times that were, they're coming again. They will come again. Ephesians speaks of bearing one another's burdens. We need to learn to do that. And the only way we can do that is if we interact with each other. When I think about young people and old people, they're not the same. I like to think about it, illustrate it as being like a fire. To get a fire started, the young people are like kindling. Kindling lights quick, lights easy, provides light and heat quickly, but it burns out quickly as well. And the older people are like the bigger pieces you put on, the logs you put on the fire. They take them a little longer to get going, but they last a lot longer. And in the end, do a lot more good. We need them both. We need the youth to continually inspire, and we need the older people to add a measure of consistency through it all. And I want to remind the young people that every old person was a youth once too. Every old person was 17 once upon a time. And they lived every day just like we lived. And it's hard to imagine that it actually happened that way. But it did. And it doesn't seem like it goes long and we all change. And we could say a lot more about many different things, and it's time to close. And we could talk about work ethic and standard of living and how it's changed. We could talk about the free time, whether or not we even had it years ago, what we did with it, and what we do with it today. Do we use it for sports, or do we use it for blessing other people's lives? What do we do with it? I think it's good if older we do talk about ideals, even though they're not always realistic. It's still good if we talk about it and engage the youth on it, interact on it. Why do we do this, and why do we do that? And where did this ever come from? That's a young man told me recently, we need to get rid of some of this dead wood that we have. Well, I started thinking about that a lot. Okay, what is the dead wood that we have? What are the things that we do that we don't really have a principle? We still have an application, but no principle. Well, it's good for young people to engage older people on dead wood. And for older people to say, that, you know what, that's not completely dead yet. There's a reason that's there. There's actually still some leaves on that if you look for them. But we need to interact. There's not a lot I can tell the youth besides obey. I know you probably didn't want to hear that this morning. But the responsibility of older people is to interact with the youth. The responsibility of the younger youth is to obey. Obey the call of God through the Bible, through the Holy Spirit. But you're probably not going to hear this call if you spend all your time running off to the next party, to the next event. If you spend all your time texting your buddies or watching YouTube videos, you're probably not going to hear that call. So there's a caution about those things. Let's remember to, even as youth, yes, obey, but also make room for godliness, spiritual things in our lives, and not just do the fun things all the time. Even if, and one thing I've noticed, I haven't been around real long, but one thing I've noticed is parents don't always have it right. Sometimes they ask their youth to do things that aren't right. And I've had to advise some youth already to do what their parents said anyway, even though being a little older person than they are, that, you know what, your parents did have it a little backwards here. But you need to respect them anyway. And they were blessed by it. And even if your parents do have it wrong, even if the older generation doesn't seem like they have it right, when we respect them and try to live in obedience to it, it does give us a blessing. So God bless you here as a congregation as you continue to follow after truth.